Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, welcome to the toy department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. I think we're going to try to do, I don't know if abbreviated is the right word, but we're going to kind of quickly run through things this week. Because
Expedited.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, we're going to expedite the episode because I did not tell you this until this moment. I chose this moment right at the start of the podcast to tell you about my current situation.
Okay.
You know I'm on vacation.
I do know you're on vacation. Are you like on a cruise and you're stranded in the ocean or something? What's going on?
Not quite that. We drove up to Portland. A friend of mine is getting married in not too long, and my wife's brother and sister-in-law live here. So we are social distance visiting with some people and... getting away from home for a little bit for funsies. When you travel with a baby, you make sure the place you're staying has a place for the baby to sleep. In this case, a pack and play, which is like a foldable little enclosure. And okay. We arrived at about 7:30, 7:45 last night, past the baby's bedtime.
How long was that drive, by the way? I know that's not the point of this story, but man, that seems like a haul to drive to Portland.
You could do it in 9 or 9.5 hours if you're really hitting it. But if you're making stops and walking a baby around, it's more like 11. We arrived after his bedtime, got him into the pack and play, and shut the door, and before we could rush back to the door and open it, we watched him on the monitor climb out of the pack and play and fall on his head. And that was approximately 8:30 p.m., at which point I started researching crib rental and then found out that it would actually be cheaper to just buy a crib at Target. So... at 9:30, 9:45 last night, I was running into Target to purchase a crib, which I then had to assemble with my two hands. And that is where my son spent the second half of his night last night, once I finally got it put together. And then this morning, we sort of... figured out that there was not a good place for me to record the podcast while my wife and son exist in the Airbnb in which we're staying. So I am sitting in a car in front of a house in residential Portland with my computer in the passenger seat because the passenger seat is closer to the Wi-Fi. Yeah. So here we are.
That's amazing.
Yep.
I also think recording a podcast in a car sounds very Portlandia.
It does sound very Portlandia. Like there's a lady down the street sort of eyeballing me right now as she's taking her garbage out or something. And she's kind of like, why is that man sitting in a car with a headset on?
I bet if you just leaned out the window and you're like, recording a podcast, she'd be like, oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, cool. That happens all the time.
All right. Well, let's see if we can get this done before somebody calls the cops.
Rock and roll.
That seems to be the mood in the country these days, just either calling the cops or pulling guns on whoever. I'd hate for you to be victim to Portland Karens world.
No thank you. I feel like a Portland Karen would be a really potent Karen, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Portland Karen has seen some things.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's a lot of a lot of things that are going to ignore or annoy a Karen in Portland.
Yeah, I don't think there's probably a huge percentage of Karens in Portland, but the ones that are here are probably really fed up.
Yeah, just fed up. All right. Well, we have got a couple of things to talk about that were on the docket from the show that we didn't do last week, and then a couple of things that we watched in the interim on our little vacation.
Yeah. Do you think – quick question before we dive in.
Yeah.
Is anything we watched since – like that we added on worthwhile? Should we have just left it?
Just left it as it was? Well, I actually liked both things that we watched.
Oh, okay. This is gonna be an interesting discussion.
Yeah, I'm not gonna tell you that you know, like, these were essential viewing items that we couldn't have done the show without.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Why don't we start there? In fact,
yeah.
With the two things that we added, I guess most prominent of which is Eurovision, the new Will Ferrell movie, that debuted on Netflix and was number one on Netflix, I think, over the weekend. It's since dropped to number two. Although, do you ever look at that, like, kind of just what's in the Netflix top 10 now that they've started showing this?
I do, and then inevitably the thought I have is this real?
I tend to think it's real, and just that, like, you know, people have bad ideas. that's sort of more generally more,
yeah,
more of my
like
take on it.
Yeah, people like bad stuff, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know. There's almost, I would say, it's rare to find more than three half-decent things in that top 10.
Yeah, and some of them are just bizarre, but whatever. Okay, Eurovision. This is...
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
It's a Will Ferrell movie that's, I mean, it's certainly no, you know, Anchorman or Old School. It's also not like, I'm trying to think of it's not Night at the Roxbury. But I found myself just like inessential is the right word to describe this movie. Not bad. Like, it was funny. It was so weird. I mean, it was so weird. And it was funny at times, but not like must-see funny. And I don't know what the point of it was at all.
Yeah, I feel like it sort of exists in between the space of, like, Anchorman and some of Will Ferrell's more serious turns in things, you know?
Like a Stranger like Than Fiction sort of deal?
Yeah, like, I think it's kind of somewhere tonally in the area of, like, Elf, maybe.
Yeah,
where...
but wasn't that weird? Like, didn't it feel like the material deserved the seriousness of Anchorman and got the seriousness of Elf, if that makes sense?
Yes, sort of. I think, like, are you familiar with the actual Eurovision?
Not enough for, like, if they were inside jokes, I missed them.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that. I don't mean like that. But yeah, like, you know, like Eurovision, the Eurovision Song Contest is a real thing. You know, as I understand it, I think a lot of this was sort of, you know, it wasn't so much a parody as almost like a love letter to it. You know what I mean? Where, like, yeah, they kind of, I think, turned up the volume a little bit on some of the ridiculousness, particularly, like, you know, Dan Stevens's character and some of the sing-alongs. But I think they were also at the same time really not, or really trying not to make fun of it. You know what I mean?
Kind of. Yeah. Well, what I would say what they were trying to do is not make fun of it, but, like, make fun of it in a way that made it clear that it's a labor of love.
Yes.
Yeah. I will say, Dan Stevens was the best part of this movie by a long way, if you ask me.
Ooh. Sorry, go ahead. You go ahead. Give me your Dan Stevens love, but I have a different MVP of this film.
I have a sixth man of the year as well.
Okay.
But Dan Stevens is the MVP for me because every time he was on the screen, I just started laughing. His whole thing was so absurd, and he was so committed. Like, when you're a serious actor like he is, and we've seen him in serious roles, like, you have to commit hard to something like that. And I thought he was just awesome.
Yeah, I agree. He really leaned into it.
Yes. It was like it was a totally committed performance. And like that's what that sort of comedy deserves and requires. My sixth man is the guy from Sex Education who blew everything up.
Literally.
What a great little turn for that guy. He was perfect.
Yeah, I was happy to see him. And I do think, to me, the cast here, I think, generally elevated a lot of this material, which is one of the reasons why I would say that I did like it.
Yeah.
You know, having people like Pierce Brosnan.
Yep.
You know, in sort of a supporting role. Like, I think that really helps. And to me, the MVP of this movie is Rachel McAdam.
Yeah.
Who I think...
I mean, she's the lead, really, right?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, obviously a lot of the story is about her, and I think that she pulls off the ridiculous stuff when that is called for, and then also is able to provide the emotional center in a film that doesn't necessarily need to have an emotional center.
Yeah. Did you ever wish they skipped the accents, though? Like, I don't know if that was part of the joke,
general?
That they were kind of going in and out. No, but Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams specifically. Like, they were half-hearted Icelandic accents.
I really like the Icelandic accent, so I actually enjoyed when they would do it.
Yeah, okay.
But I agree, you're right. It wasn't they were not committed into their ridiculous accent in nearly the same way that Dan Stevens was. I think
that's sort of my point. That's why I thought he was the MVP, is like he went all the way there. I do think it's harder to maintain an Icelandic accent in the same way he did that goofy Russian one, for sure. But, you know, do it or don't do it. It would have been funny to me if they just had no accents and everyone around them had accents. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Pierce Brosnan was good.
Pierce Brosnan was good. Yeah, you're right. I don't know. I feel like that Will Ferrell character, like, with the hair and then no accent would have been, like...
Hilarious.
That would have been interesting.
I don't know. But look, I'm not telling you not to watch this movie. I'm just saying, like, that, you know, it's fine. It's fine.
It's fine. I was irrationally happy when the Sigur Rós music started kicking in. I was hoping for it, and then when it arrives, it was here, and then there's, like, some bonus Sigur Rós later on, and then...
Yeah.
It all made me very happy, and I enjoyed the movie. Although
Demi Lovato, also nice little guest role.
And I say that despite the fact that it's very musically.
Do you realize you just said it's very musically?
I did. Yes.
But that's right. It's musically, and like it's more a lot more smiles than laughs. But like it's a little long, but it's not a bad way to spend a couple hours.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, especially now, as you can tell, you'll be able to tell when we get to homework.
Yeah. It's getting sparse, man, and it's only gonna get sparser.
Exactly.
No
you can
one's
do
been
worse.
Doing anything.
So I take it just from the tone of your intro. That you were not in love with I'll Be Gone in the Dark, which is the
No, you know what? I shouldn't have, sorry to interrupt you, I should not have said it that way. It's just, this was a pilot episode of a documentary.
Yeah, I think that's fair, because it is, I mean, you have some sense of what it's going to be, and that it's really a story on two tracks, right?
Yes.
There's the case of the Golden State Killer, which is actually currently in the news, kind of neat.
Yeah, he's in trial right now, right?
Yeah, on trial right now. Although I don't know that there's going to be much of a trial because, spoiler alert, he's pleading guilty.
Yeah, he did.
So, you know, there's that. But then there's also the story of Michelle McNamara, who's the woman whose work, and I say work as that she's not a policeman, she's a writer.
Yeah.
Her work, you know, really led to ultimately finding this guy who,
and look,
whose crimes were in the 70s mostly, right? If I'm not mistaken,
a lot of them. But listen, yeah, like this guy was a prolific criminal. And they make this point in the pilot, like a prolific criminal to the degree that it's surprising we didn't know more about him before Michelle McNamara did that work.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, you know,
which makes it important work, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. It's weird to put in those terms, but like, you know, if you're just talking about the sheer amount of terror and pain inflicted, like it's right up there with any of the famous serial killers or,
right,
you know, people who would have an episode of Mindhunter dedicated to them, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
And like, we know about those people partially because they were caught, but also even sometimes when they weren't, because criminals that, you know, create that sort of swath of terror across wide areas and time periods, there's an obsession with them in this society. And beyond the obsession, like, it's newsworthy, you know?
Yeah.
So the fact that an investigative crime journalist had to essentially not just solve the case, but just make people aware of it, it's pretty insane. I'm excited to watch this. I just, when I was saying, you know, this week's additions felt inessential, it's just we're two or three episodes from the meat here, I feel like.
Yeah, definitely. I want to say it's a 6-episode show, I feel like is right. So I think there's definitely a lot more to come.
And look, the story here of just her passing and Patton finishing the work, it's a really unique and interesting story, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I sort of look forward to it being told. I'm curious, like, how do you feel, I realize this is a little bit of a tangent, about sort of the murder media cottage industry that's sprung up around and definitely sort of touches this film a little bit, right? Like, there's interviews with the My Favorite Murder lady in the first podcast.
Yeah.
It
creeps me out, but I've come to share my life with someone who is totally in on the murder obsession, so I've become accustomed to it.
Yeah, well, one of my best friends and my sister are huge murderinos.
Yeah.
So,
you remember when you first watched, it took maybe 2 years for you to convince me to watch Making a Murderer.
I do remember that, yeah.
Because I just don't, it's not how I want to spend my entertainment time. Like, as a child, I read fantasy novels, and I like to watch Lord of the Rings. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to be transported to a magical realm. I don't necessarily want to live in the misery of our realm. But this murder obsession has sort of coincided with an era of documentary film that makes a lot of these pretty incredible entertainment pieces. So it's, you know, it giveth and it taketh away, the murder obsession, if you ask me.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. And I definitely think it's really interesting that the most ardent consumers of this seem to be women. You know what I mean? Like, there are whole channels that are really dedicated to.
Yeah. Especially since these things now, the criminals tend to be men.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, men doing horrible, like really, really horrible things.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what that dynamic is there, to be honest.
We probably need like an hour with a psychologist or a sociologist to figure that out.
Yeah. And it's not, I mean, a lot of the stuff, like you said, is really great. It's not fun. I'm not judging. I just,
it
feels like there's something there. You know what I mean?
To me, it is not fun. And that's sort of the problem. It's good, but it's not fun. And that's where, like, I either have to, you know, have a reason, you know, the podcast or my wife or something to watch most of these things. But afterwards, it's not like I regret watching it. I'm just like, man, I could use an episode of Always Sunny in Philadelphia. You know?
Yeah, you gotta bounce it out. Give me some Schitt's Creek or something. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Exactly. You know what I've been watching recently? HBO Max has all of the OC.
Oh, you know what? I don't think I knew that.
Oh yeah, you want a little late night popcorn, baby? Get after it. Oh man, Marissa's on pills. She might get sent to a hospital in San Diego. It's all going down, and it's only the first season.
I'll tell you, I fell down a rabbit hole a couple of months ago of the Saturday Night Live sketch that is the parody of the OC, like Misha Barton death scene.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. Spoiler alert, Jesus. Yeah.
Sorry. And that was really fun to just watch the parody of that scene and then the actual scene.
Yeah.
And listen to Imogen Heap like 700 times. Oh, like, my God. Yeah, enjoyed the whole thing.
Yeah, Imogen Heap really had a moment there.
Sure did. And then it's weird. Like, I feel like every 5 years or so, somebody digs that song up and samples it.
I was going to say, the next moment for her was Jason Derulo sampling the song.
So, all right. Let's, while we're on the subject of HBO Max, you want to talk? We have a couple of HBO Max shows.
While we're on the subject of inessential, depressing shit on HBO Max, let's talk about Perry Mason.
Good. I'm so glad that you felt this way as well. Because
I
couldn't tell you,
there are two things that are redeemable about this show, in my view.
Okay, hit me.
One is the reason you watched the second episode and the reason you convinced me to watch the second episode, and that's Tatiana Maslany. And I would recommend trying to see if you can find all of her scenes from the show on YouTube and watch them individually
because she does go to town. Yeah,
dude, she's just a powerhouse and it's awesome to watch. The other redeemable thing, and weirdly, I actually think spectacular, is the soundtrack. I don't know. Did you notice this show has a killer film noir soundtrack, and whoever
I had
did
not
it,
noticed.
I feel like whoever did the soundtrack creates more tension and drama with musical notes than any of the plot or performance in this show does. Because other than the soundtrack, I couldn't tell you what the F is going on or why anybody cares about anything in this world.
Yeah, that's clearly the problem with the show. I would go as far as to say the production values in general are great. You can tell that they spent $1 million, you know, a figurative $1 million on this thing.
Yeah.
You know, like the World War I scenes look like they're yep. out of 1917 or something.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, I think, some great costume design. You see some decent photography. Clearly, they spent a lot of money on the cast.
On the cast and with the photography, I mean, it's also just, I do think sometimes we underestimate the difficulty of making a whole world that looks like 1930 or whatever it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Like this, yeah, I agree.
It's very
convincing. And a specific place.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like they're taking real LA landmarks and putting yep. them, you know, in other contexts, which I think probably is a Herculean task that we sort of look at on screen for a scene and go, yeah. okay, great.
But other than that, it's literally like somebody saw Chinatown and was like, oh, I could do that, and then did it terribly.
Yeah, there's just a whole, what are we doing here vibe
yeah.
about this whole thing. Like,
and also, who the fuck is Perry Mason? Let me ask you this. What's your, if this had never happened, and I was like, hey, what do you think of Perry Mason? Who's Perry Mason? What would you have said?
I would have said TV lawyer. Right?
Right.
Is that what you mean? Yeah.
Exactly.
TV
That's
lawyer.
Literally all anyone who's still alive knows about Perry Mason is TV lawyer. And like, not just TV lawyer, but in my, and I don't think I've ever seen an episode of Perry Mason, so this might be totally invented, but in my mind, like, smooth operating, suave courtroom guy.
Yeah.
And here we have like a beat up PTSD'd World War One vet private detective
with egg on his tie.
So it's mustard. So
mustard. Yeah, you're right. Sorry.
We just did the bit though, which is pretty good. So who is this guy and why is this called Perry Mason? Because and again, I could be wrong because I don't have attachment to the original, but it seems to me like anyone who liked Perry Mason would be like, who the fuck is this guy? What is this? And the vast majority of us who have no attachment to Perry Mason, like, why is this called Perry Mason? I don't get it at all.
I don't either. And I just like, why make him into a gritty anti-hero with PTSD? It just feels so done. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I've seen that story. That story was 10 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, just everything that happens in this just feels like it's done before. And you just walk away feeling like this is just a giant waste of an incredible cast and a lot of money.
Yeah. And even Tatiana Maslany, who really like bounces off the screen, and God, that sermon was insane. But like, I've seen that character 1,000 times.
Yep. Yep. The whole thing leaves me sour.
Yeah, and you know what else? And maybe it's just because I did enjoy the soundtrack and production value so much. Like, I'm here for a film noir show. I am.
Yeah, you are more than I am. But okay. I'm here to watch these people. Yeah, I mean? Like, I.
But this is not it, know? Man. This is not it. And it's long. God,
yes.
It's like it's a full hour, if not like an hour and 5 minutes, and it just drags.
Yeah, it is a slog for sure. You want to talk about Search Party?
I do. This is the opposite of a slog.
It is the opposite of a slog, but it's also not Schitt's Creek or the OC.
Oh, no, it's
like,
not,
you know what
fun,
I mean?
Really. It's certainly not popcorn-y, but it moves, man. Short
it does
episodes,
move.
And it moves. And I don't, you know, I feel like the 30,000-foot view of what has happened with this show would indicate, like, they've lost the thread. But I'm not any less interested in watching it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm still here, and I'm going to keep watching, and I'm interested to see where it goes. And I'm sort of excited for the idea of maybe leaning into some of the parody of, you know, media's view of hipsters and crime and things like that, where it sort of seems like it's heading. But I do just sort of miss the four ridiculous people who ridiculous and completely unself-aware people who formed
in the
a
same
friendship.
Room. Yeah.
Yeah. And just made me laugh all the time.
There's not
a lot of laughs in this. None, but there's not a lot.
But I do wonder if we're headed back there. How many did you watch?
I've seen like 5.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then
maybe
I fell asleep last night while the other 5 played.
Okay.
So I got to figure out where the hell I left off.
All right. I've only watched 2 or 3. So you're farther than me. And if it hasn't taken a more comedic turn, I could be wrong. But it sort of feels to me like we're bringing them back together slowly but surely. And I don't know. I can't get enough in general of Alia Shawkat and John Early. To me, he is still hilarious.
Yeah, he's still great.
Like he is the continuing comedic heartbeat of this show. Everything he does is funny.
Correct.
Did I ever tell you I saw him live doing stand up at a Outside Lands?
No.
Yeah, you know, Outside Lands, a lot of these festivals have, like, the comedy tent now.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago. But it was shortly after the first season of Search Party, actually. I saw him, and he was super funny. That's all I got. That's the whole story.
Okay. I saw Louis C.K. in a Bonnaroo Comedy Tent once.
Yeah.
Back back when back before it was even cool, to be honest.
Oh wow.
So and he did a set right after Janine Garofalo, which I think would have provided a really interesting juxtaposition today.
Probably more interesting in the other order today, but
yeah. Yes. Yes, indeed. Indeed. I do love that it's, you know, like it's sort of a de rigueur part of comedian, you know, comic specials now to just take a run at him for like 2 minutes and then move on to something else. Let's
take a little shot.
Okay. Moving on. So look, I would recommend Search Party, but I'm not having nearly as much fun as I had in the first season or two.
Yeah, I mean, start at the beginning. You know, if you haven't watched Search Party, the nice thing about this is they're 10 episode seasons of like 20 to 25 minute episodes, and they're pacey. Even when they're not funny, they fly by.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, it's like the next one's starting, and you're like, oh man, what's going to happen next? It definitely, even now when it's not as much fun, has the, ooh, what's next feel about it.
Yeah, it's bingeable. Have you met Dory's lawyer yet?
Dory's lawyer. Yes, I have. Yes. Yeah, the episode I just finished was where the lawyer picked her up at jail and they went back to her house and like she made a statement.
Yeah, she's doing a lot of the comic heavy lifting as we go here in this season, I feel.
She
like,
was so funny. She was very funny.
Yeah, yeah, she's good. Okay. I guess that brings us to the challenge.
Yeah.
Oh wait, no, we should talk about the shy first. Sorry, and then we get to the challenge. Yeah. Right. So you watched one episode of The Shy, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think coming into this, right, we were talking about how they were going to deal with Jason Williams being fired.
Yes.
Mitchell, excuse me, being fired from the show. And they got that out of the way pretty much in the first scene, right? So,
and it, you know, it was a little awkward, but we move on, I suppose, right? Like, I don't know what else. I'm not sure there's a better way than just like, look, he got shot. It's over. He's dead.
Yep, and we're on to the next.
Anything, you know? It's almost like anything else you do just prolongs the notability of his absence.
Yeah. Although I'm kind of sad that his fiance now sort of just seems to also kind of be written out of the show in a sort of de facto way.
No, she left.
Oh, that's right.
That was the inciting incident, I believe. I think she left before he was fired.
Hmm.
Or
and that was part of that was the whole deal, was something that happened between them.
Well, I mean, I know, I don't want to screw up the timeline, but I know that when she left, she released a statement about like, you know, the set's not a place where everyone can feel safe and comfortable or something like that. She never mentioned him specifically. But then he was fired for, you know, similar stuff. So,
oh yes, I had no idea about that. That's a bummer.
Yeah. So she had already left. But yeah, that it just it's like if the storylines on a show like this, which is ambitious and has a lot of them, are, you know, different sort of roads forking out from a main road. This one just like you just put a dead end sign on the one road, you know.
Yep. But like you said, the show is doing a lot of stuff, right?
There's so much other stuff, and once you get over just like the main character, the guy who seemed like the most main character is gone, it's not like you need an extra. You're not wanting for a storyline. There's plenty of storylines. There's plenty of meat here, and frankly, like, I think most of the more interesting characters are still here because he was sort of a central character and maybe a little less interesting than some of the others.
He was, he could be a little one-note as a character.
he was fine, and I liked Jason Mitchell as an actor, but, you know, good riddance as far as I'm concerned.
Indeed, indeed. And, you know, I think a lot of the stuff that is fun about this show or interesting or compelling about the show is all still there. Like, a lot of the sort of slice of life stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of the characters are great. Like, you know, it can be pretty funny at times.
Yep. It can be incredibly moving. If I have a criticism of this show, it's just that it doesn't seem to have locked into any specific focus. It can be a little all over the place.
It can be.
And it's just a really hard thing to do, you know? Like, there's a reason shows like The Wire are considered one of, if not the greatest show of all time, because juggling 16 storylines and still feeling focused is very, very hard to do. And it's not a big criticism, because I still want to watch The Chi, but I do think it makes it a little less compelling in some ways. And, you know, I would have watched the second episode if I hadn't had to put together a crib last night, so.
Yeah, fair enough. What do you think of the depictions of the depiction of sex on this show?
The act?
The act, yeah.
I think, how do I say this? I think Lena Waithe had, I don't want to say had a point to prove, but wanted, it strikes me as very specific and as clearly the goal of the creator of the show, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
It sort of strikes me as, yeah, like Lena Waithe has a point in terms of like wanting to include representation,
yes,
sort of within this thing.
It's representational sexually.
Yes. So you get to see a lot I feel like there's a lot of sex scenes with actors who probably don't get a lot of sex scenes.
Yep.
In other work. You know what I mean?
And just
which
sex
I think is
scenes.
Cool.
Right. Sex scenes between characters that you wouldn't expect to see that intimate side of them. It seems to kind of, in a way, be making the point like, hey, like, we're all out here fucking, man, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
but
you
I
might
also
not
sort
picture
of feel
it
like
all that much, but everybody's doing it.
I also sort of feel like that's her point. And then I feel like it's like the Showtime executives pass a note of like, make it more Showtimey.
Let's get some more sex in here.
Yeah,
maybe.
So it's like this weird combination of like, hey, we're doing this thing in representation and you know, and we're showing some non-traditional people, you know, getting it on sometimes.
Yeah.
But then it's also like really lingering and lusty at the same time.
Sometimes,
you know what I mean?
I that's a really interesting point, and I would not be shocked if like the first half of season one got the note, we need more titties, and Lena Waithe was like, you want titties? I'll show you titties.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because
right.
It's a little at odds, especially now that you mention it. Like, the style and quantity of sex is a little at odds with, like, the representational aspect of it.
Yeah.
But you know, while the Showtime note narrative is believable, the Lena Waithe just thought this is how it should be narrative is believable too, don't you think?
I agree. Like, I feel like they're both sort of existing at the same time. And
yeah,
like if she came out and was like, no, this is all my idea and I wanted to give it sort of that you know, late night Cinemax
right
feel to people that you wouldn't necessarily expect to see. So, and by the way, some people that you would expect to see.
Oh,
too.
For sure.
You know, as a comment like that, I would buy that, but there are times when it feels a little discordant to me, which is why I brought it up. So
yeah, no, it's an interesting point. I think you're definitely right.
So, but for the most part, I think the show is really fun. It's well acted. We're now at the point where we kind of live with these characters for a couple of seasons. And so, you know, there's that sort of familiarity, I feel like, a little bit.
Yep.
That, you know, I think helps a generally well-written show like this. And I'm excited to see Lena Waithe act in it.
Yeah, me too.
Get a little further down the road.
It's been a while since we've seen her on screen. I feel like
yeah.
Master of None really is the last major Lena Waithe acting I can think of.
Yeah, although I think she does voiceover for like AT&T.
Oh, is that? That makes sense.
I feel like I can actually get a lot of her.
You know, there are those voices that I'm always like, I know who that is. But Lena, that makes sense if she's doing AT&T.
Yeah. Would you hear it? I mean, I could be wrong. No one's ever said that to me, but I'm pretty sure that's who it is.
Yeah, it's like once you can tell that it's John Hamm doing the Mercedes commercial, like you just start picturing him every time you hear
it. Yeah. That's a weird one because I don't know if you've noticed that a lot of the other luxury car companies have hired someone that sounds like John Hamm.
Yes. I have noticed that.
Yeah, so it's very confusing.
It makes sense. Like there's something about his voice that is like both classy and accessible.
Yeah.
Which really describes John Hamm in general, I guess.
Yeah, he is. That man's been gifted too many things. I don't like it.
I'm gonna leave that there.
It's not fair.
I'm not even gonna touch that.
It's like you know how like Jack Johnson is like a good looking dude and a singer and a filmmaker and a surfer.
Yeah,
it's like just pick one, bro. Uh-huh. You know, maybe you. Two.
Yeah. Yeah, God's not supposed to give with both hands, right?
All right, now let's get to the challenge. Whew. Yeah, couple episodes to talk about here.
I mean, look, I'm going to say it again. I know we've talked about it, but it is so jarring what they're doing with D. It's so weird and jarring. There was a moment, my wife and I were watching last night, and
I think I know what you're going to say, actually, I'm curious.
Her name was mentioned one time, and it was when her barrel, like her heavy barrel dropped.
Yes, exactly it. And it was and like, they like kind of quit cucked her to the barrel dropping.
Yep.
And they're like, D, you're out.
D's out. And that
was like, oh, D's here.
She was mentioned in the like pre-show warning, and she got eliminated from the one challenge, and otherwise she did not appear on screen. No ITMs. No one mentioned her name. In fact, when they were going through all the people that they could put into elimination, she is a skull. We could do her. Clearly, they mentioned D when they had that conversation, and they cut it.
Yeah. I've said this already. I think they're doing the show a disservice on it, but that's where I'm at. Like, because it's getting to be just weird, you know?
I think it is more like they are drawing more attention to the situation by awkwardly cutting around her than they would if they just like left her in as a minor character.
Yeah. And look, I could get maybe like you don't give a bunch of ITMs necessarily.
Right. And if she was supposed to be a center storyline sort of piece and you changed that, fair enough. But like cutting around her to where then all of a sudden her name is mentioned and you're like, oh yeah, she's there. It's weird. It's weird. And like, I don't want to, I'm not defending her at all, but she's also not a Nazi. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got Nazis. We got Nazis all over our country. It's like to me, it's a little bit like Hulu pulling the mud mask episode of Golden Girls.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Where it's like, okay, we're getting a little bit far from the point here.
Like, I see what you're trying to do, but you're not serving anybody with this.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the disclaimer at the beginning of the show is real clear.
Yeah.
Like, we know where you stand on this, and we're good with that. Let's just watch the show, and you can address this going forward in future seasons. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. It's weird just to it's one of those things where, like, I'm going to make an analogy that you're going to hate. It's like Voldemort.
I believe you're going to make an analogy that I don't understand. That actually is what it is.
You've seen Harry Potter movies,
no,
right?
Never.
Wait, you have zero knowledge of Harry Potter whatsoever?
I know if you're saying it's like Voldemort, I know Voldemort is the bad guy.
Okay, well, the whole thing at the beginning of the Harry Potter saga, no one says Voldemort out loud.
Okay, gotcha.
It's he who shall not be named. And at a certain point, someone makes the point that, like, never saying his name and making it into this mythic thing gives him more power. And to me, again, awkwardly cutting around her to where it's noticeable just draws more attention to her in a weird way.
In a weird way, yeah. That, like, the moment where, like, she gets eliminated, like, that you brought up is super awkward. Because, like you said, I knew exactly what you were talking about the second you brought it up.
Because it's like, Dee's there. Wait a second. I haven't seen her in 4 episodes.
Yeah.
And
you know what I mean? And, like, I think we all have a feeling, based on the whole rest of the season, that she's going to be there at the end, right?
Seems like
it. So what, are we just going to, like, pretend? I mean, obviously, MTV knows whether or not she's there at the end or not. So maybe, you know, they've got more information about this than we do. But it just, I don't know. It all seems very weird. And it's constantly hanging over the show now in a way.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
I was going
to
say
you're about to answer the question I was going to ask.
That said, I liked this last episode.
Oh, you did? Because I feel like the show is sputtering its wheels a little bit. Like, I sort of wish that, like, I was kind of bummed to realize that the next episode is not the final. Like, I feel like I'm ready for the final now. You know what I mean?
Well, I think they did miscalculate a thing. Like, it's tricky because in a lot of ways, this rule that you have to win an elimination to go to the final made things more interesting and exciting for a while. But it also created the idea that, like, at a certain point, TJ was going to pull a ripcord and a bunch of jackasses who never got into an elimination were gone. And now that possibility is over.
Yes.
So now
Agreed.
We're at a place where it's just like any other season. Right?
Correct. And now it's going to be...
Go ahead.
You sent me into elimination. I hate you. Right?
Right.
Like, now we're back to that. We're back to that dynamic.
We're back to the same dynamic. So I feel like there's a bit of a miscalculation there. And if they were going to do it this way, they had to pull the ripcord earlier. But then there would have been so many people in the final. So I'm just not sure this twist is very... effective.
Yeah, agreed.
In the long run.
I think one of the reasons why I feel like the show is spinning its wheels, particularly in this last episode, is because we spent so much time on this Corey, Fessy, Josh situation, about being butthurt about this thing where that, like, doesn't really matter.
Doesn't
for
matter
the game
at all. Nope.
And I just kind of, I kind of wanted to shake Corey of, like, dude, you're safe. You're moving on to the next thing. You have a red skull.
Stop being stupid.
Like, what is this? Like, you're just ego is sad because you threw a challenge.
What else though? It's just, I think it's, they're all mentally broken. Like, that bunker is breaking them down. They all.
Yeah, that could be.
With the possible exception of Fessy, they all are falling apart. And I liked this episode because, to me, maybe the best ongoing comedy of this show is just the existence of Josh. And when, at the very end of the episode, when TJ is like, Bailey, you eliminated a legend, and Kyle, you eliminated a guy who cries a lot.
That was one of the all-time TJ lines, actually.
It's like, yeah, that's it. He is. That's who he is. That's who Josh is. He's the guy who cries a lot.
Yep.
Happy or sad, he's crying. I mean, so I just, all the stuff with him and the whole season, he's been spectacular. He creates feuds that aren't there. He gets offended when people are trying to be nice and nice when people are trying to offend him. Like, it's just, he's the biggest emotional wreck the show has ever seen.
Yeah. It does make him a great heel, I feel like, in a way. Like,
oh, it's wonderful.
it's weird because, like, you're right. Like, I don't know that I've ever rooted harder for anyone in an elimination than Kyle against Josh.
Oh, for sure.
And yet, I also, now that Josh is gone, which I definitely wanted, I sort of also feel like the show is going to be worse off for it.
Yeah, so. No, I agree with you. There's an elephant in the room here, so to speak. And that is Johnny Bananas. Like, that's how we save the season.
Yes, that he gets more involved. And I think, obviously, he's going to be more assertive as there are fewer guys left. And really...
Well, things have changed now. Because he has done an incredible job of, you know, even while aligning himself with Wes for the first time ever, flying largely under the radar all the way up to his elimination challenge, winning it, getting the Red Skull, and going right back under the radar.
Yeah,
but it's not now. He's going to have to get on the radar to stay out of elimination.
Agreed, because it feels like there's the Corey Nelson Fessy group.
They're coming for him.
Yeah, like they sort of have control of the game, and right now they have numbers, and you know they're three strong dudes. Like eliminating any one of them will be a task. So
well, and you know physically he. Bananas might have a shot against Corey or Nelson, but not Fessy.
Yeah, Fessy's mean. And by the way, I like that this is just sort of casual reveal of like Muslim, you know what I mean? Which I think speaks to a point I made last week about just sort of
it's
this show's pretty good on the diversity front.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you're right. And I will say my reaction to that was, oh, okay. Now the name sort of makes a little more sense, you know, because Fessy is weird. And I guess it could be a last name. Like, you don't know exactly what it is, but like.
I just sort of assumed it was a nickname.
Right. Me too. Yeah. But for like a big white football player, it's a weird nickname somehow.
Yeah.
And it like it made more sense when he was like, my dad's Middle Eastern and Muslim, et cetera.
Have you done a Google dive at all on him? Where did he play football?
I have not. In fact, I didn't even realize he was a tight end until he said it in this episode.
Yeah. Although 30th ranked tight end is not – I don't know that you should be assuming you're going to be in the NFL if you're the 30th ranked tight end in your
That's
class.
That's so funny. That's the exact same thought I had was like, bro, if you're 30th tight end, like you're
and
not
there's 30 teams.
Drafted. Yeah. His name is Faisal, F-A-Y-S-A-L.
Okay. So it is a nickname essentially.
Yeah, but it's just like it's a nickname off of his name. Tennessee. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, so he was that a Tennessee tight end, which is pretty legit. I mean, he's 6'5", 250, bro. Like that's most of, even the big guys on the challenge are like surprisingly normal sized, you know?
Yeah. It sort of reminds me of when they did the pros versus Joes seasons,
right?
And they had a couple of those NFL guys, and you could just sort of see them ripping through it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because you're like, oh, these are insane athletes, you know? So
insane. And like the you know challengers are normal people who are good athletes, you know. And then there's pros. It's a totally different deal.
Correct. But, you know, they're also the talented people, as you saw in that show, right?
Well, they have
they're
their
also good at playing the game.
No
right?
doubt.
You know what
no,
I mean?
No,
yeah.
No doubt.
And we're still playing that game. So just the fact that he's a much better athlete than everybody, you know, is not necessarily a cruise to the finish.
No,
like
that's
this.
True.
You still got to play the game.
The way, just to give you an example, like Kyle, who historically feels like, you know, a super tall challenger, right?
Is like 6 foot?
He's 6 feet, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like CT is 6'1", you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
6'5" is a monster. I'm not sure they've ever had a guy athletically like Fessy.
It's full Hollywood height right there. You know what, you know what I mean? Like there, that's the scale they're on. And I feel like Nelson is like 5'4", but I
Well,
I
like
could be
Nelson, Corey, all these guys are like 5'9 or under, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Which I enjoy because that is the height that I'm at. So
yeah, it makes it more accessible for sure.
Yeah. I do like that part about it. I just want to say one thing about Anissa. Mm. This is another part of the spinning. Like, this is another part of why I felt this episode was a little bit of like wheel spinning, because it was the half the plot with her was like, oh, I made it to the day before the final and it would suck to go out now. And it's like, well, it turns out not the day before the final. So I'm glad we went through all that.
I mean, we don't know that though, right?
We don't know that because TJ just walked away and they cut it off as a cliffhanger. Yeah. But when you watch the scenes from next week, it seems pretty clear they're not doing a final.
You're right. There's at least one more elimination.
Yeah. So,
it's a hall brawl.
Right. We see the hall brawl, and the hall brawl will be great.
I feel like it might be another double though. I feel like we might get another double and then right to the final.
Yeah, I kind of think that'll be the case too, because there it does still feel like there may be a few too many people, particularly if it's an individual final.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, yeah, so look, with the Anissa thing, like we knew this was coming. I feel terrible for her because my wife and I were talking about this. I would guess you feel similarly. Like, of all the people I've ever seen on the challenge, I feel like I could chill with Anissa.
Yeah, and if I could just concerns roll Anissa, you know, it's like, girl, you've been on the show 12 seasons. You know what it is. Yeah. You're beloved by the people in this house as a member of this game. You are really good at puzzles. Just go train. There's one really obvious hole in your game. Yeah.
Go running. Go, but you know what?
Go get a personal trainer and work your ass off for a season if you really want to win, and you can come back and win, you know?
Yeah. I wonder, this is just a totally weird speculation, but I do wonder if she got a late call.
Yeah, that's entirely possible.
Because that's entirely possible. Over the years, Anissa's cardio has waned. But this was another level. Like,
yeah,
she's significantly heavier than she's ever been. She just looks less ready than she's ever looked, even as a older veteran. And I wonder if it was like, oh shit, we need a girl. Like, let's see what Anissa's doing, and she just wasn't trained for it.
Yeah,
because you're right. If she was like. If she knew this was coming 6 months out, she has no fucking excuse.
Yeah, 100%. Because, like, it's, you know, it's like ladder stage Shaq. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You don't, you're not going to be able to play your way into shape during the season on this show, right?
No, and it's not happening.
It's a, you know, everyone is trying to sniff out weakness, and yours is like just right there on your sleeve. You know what I mean? So,
right. Right.
You know,
and you're not. Like, if she was Jenny Strong, maybe she gets away with it because people are scared. But she's just, like, she's above average strong, not monster.
Yeah, you know. And, like, if you're coming in at the back end of almost every challenge, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, what do you expect?
You're going to be on expect? The chopping block.
You can't expect to make a final that way.
I do understand the frustration in the moment, but all of this is clearly true.
Yeah. So I hope that if she wants to continue to be on the show, that she goes in that route, because I think it would be awesome to see her win.
I'll tell you what, man, how cool
or just get
would it
to
be
a final
if she came back just like in tremendous shape.
that would be cool.
Like if Anissa came back, if she came back looking like, you know, buzzed blonde haired Brazil t-shirt Anissa from the duel, you know, like,
yeah,
let's roll, baby, come on.
I would be here for it, and her house game would be so strong, you know. Yeah. And by the way, I feel like I could say the same thing to Nani at this point, you know what I mean?
I guess, but you know, I just don't think she's got the physical gifts that, like, the thing about Anissa is if she's in shape, she can be a monster.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, Nani's so little and sort of small-framed that, you know, her cardio's not bad, and she could probably get better. But she's never going to be able to match up with girls like Jenna or Anissa physically from a strength perspective.
No, she's never going to be the same, but I think she could be Melissa. You know what I mean?
Maybe, where, like, but even Melissa has a build that, like, I'm not saying she's in great shape, but she looks like she could build muscle in a way that I don't know if Nani even could. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. I just feel like with the hurricane that exists inside her, you know what I mean? And
no, that's true.
And, like, just a little bit of muscle. Just a little bit of muscle, like, you know.
That's true. But I think about, like, Camilla, you know? Speaking of women who've gotten pushed aside because they're a little behind the times socially. and like, she was tiny, but, like, a little ball of muscle. Like, Nani just doesn't have that.
Yeah, it's the shoulders. You know what I mean? You can sort of the difference there.
Yeah, it's the round shoulder, like the Dwight Howard thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. That's fair. All right, who do you, if you were going to pick a guy and a girl to win, are you just rolling physical gifts at this point? Are you calling it Fessy and Jenny?
No, I think it's bananas. I'm overdoing this, right? Like, I'm overthinking it. But if you didn't know Johnny Bananas was going to be around till the very last episode, you would have used him more, right?
Yeah. I kind of feel that way, too. And I almost sort of think it can't be D, right? Like, they wouldn't have been this drastic about writing her out of the show if she's going to win.
If she's going to win, I don't think so. First of all, I think the female side of this is wildly competitive and interesting. Second of all, I do like Jenny, if I had to pick, just because it's hard to picture her getting beaten other than a puzzle. But I got to tell you, and I felt this for weeks now, do not sleep on Bailey. She has been, I mean, she's the breakout character of the season, right? Like,
yeah.
And I just, she's pretty tough.
She's pretty tough, and she's good TV.
She's really good TV. Yeah.
So, although, you know, you're right. I think the women's pool is fascinating, and I think there are a lot of fascinating dudes left on the other side too, right? You got this trifecta of strong, rock-headed dudes who've never won.
Although I don't know how dumb Fessy is. He's just lumped himself in with these couple of morons.
Correct. Although I don't, you know, I mean, no. I mean, I guess this is a little shade to Fessy, so I'm not even going to say no shade. I don't know that he's quite in the back of the class with Nelson and Corey, but he hasn't shown anything as a super genius either. You know what I mean?
No. But he has had some moments, like in this episode with Corey and Nelson, where he's stupefied by their idiocy. And that is encouraging.
Yes, I agree. So you got those guys with no, you know, certainly political neophytes, but right, who sort of seem to have a little bit of a handle on the game.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got Bananas, who is a legend and clearly laying in the cut right now.
Yep.
And I would say the same about Rogan. Obviously, it doesn't have the same potential, but you got a past champion who seems eerily quiet, and I don't think you can sleep on at all.
Well, and then Kyle, his absurdist wait till the last minute strategy completely worked.
Yes.
So I actually think, you know, the where the rubber meets the road here again is the women, because that, like, Bananas, Rogan, and Kyle should join together to sort of counter Rogan, counter Fessy, Nelson, and Corey, right?
Yeah. Well, the trifecta in whatever next episode is going to be key.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's going to determine which side the participants in that hall brawl fall in. But you got to feel like, you know, now that you know it's a hall brawl, it's like, Fessy's real safe, right? Like, whether he's going in or not, he's not, like, those guys beating him in that, you know what I mean?
I want to see Fessy in a hall brawl so bad. I kind of like Corey, so I don't really want to see him mess up Corey, but I would relish Fessy trucking Nelson. That would, yeah, that would be good TV.
Well, and Corey is, I mean, obviously not quite as accomplished, but Corey's an ex-football player as well. And Hallbro is basically Oklahoma drill, right? So,
yep. But Corey also has a bad knee, remember? Like, I don't know if I want to see that, man.
Yeah.
That's a lot of weight coming down. That's 6'5", 250 coming down on your bad knee.
Yeah, it should be a fun one. It should be a fun one. Are they going to have a if they do a double elimination, a female hall brawl is always great as well. No matter
spectacular,
no matter who's in it, really.
And there's a lot of tough, strong women left in this thing.
Yeah,
and look, now that maybe D doesn't make the final, now that we're in a position where, you know, everyone's got a red skull, like, anyone is game. And I'm not sure D has the numbers anymore with Rogan turning against her and Jenny not on good terms with her anymore.
Yeah, I don't – who are these friends left in the game right now? It's hard to say because no one's left to talk about her.
Right, she hasn't been on screen for 4 weeks, so I don't really remember what's going on there. But I do remember she and Jenny had a little falling out, and she was getting real feisty with everybody this season.
Yeah, yeah. You know, whatever happens, like, if there's a Bailey and Casey rivalry for the rest of the season, I'm here with that too.
But look, which of these ladies would you not want to see in a hall brawl? None of them. They'd all be good. I mean, Jenny'd probably kill any of them, but other than that, they'd all be good. And Bailey's pretty big. Like, Jenny's clearly stronger, but Bailey's not small.
Nope. And I do think if she's real mad.
Yeah. Yeah, geez. I mean, bring that same energy you brought to screaming in Casey's face for no particular reason, and you might be good.
Yeah. All right. Well, so as much as I was kind of like, meh, on these last couple episodes,
we're still
fired up for the rest of the season.
Talked ourselves right into what's coming.
All right. On that note, we have once again failed to expedite this podcast. So let's get you out of that car.
Okay. And look, we don't really have any homework assignments anyway. We're going to do some, but we don't know what. This is
ill-conceived. I'll tell you what I wrote down in the notes. There's a Kate Blanchett show on Netflix called Stateless.
Sweet.
The problem with this show for us from a homework perspective is we're taping this podcast on Thursday and it doesn't drop till Wednesday night, which is also challenge night. So I doubt that we will watch more than one episode of that if we get to it.
Try to get a
taste of that if you can. And then Hamilton comes out tomorrow on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
I've already talked a little bit about Hamilton on this podcast.
But I haven't seen it, so I'm going to see it, and then we'll see what happens.
I think both of us are probably going to wind up watching that anyway.
Yeah.
So there's a good chance that'll come up. And there's probably a good chance if you're listening to this that you want to watch that because it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. It's kind of a big deal.
And I didn't see it with the original cast. So, I don't – honestly, I mean, as talented as the original cast is, I don't know that that's going to make a huge difference in what I think of the show. But
we're going to find out.
We're going to find out, yeah.
All right. I'm getting out of this car. Have yourself a beautiful week, and I'll talk to you next Thursday. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.
Yeah, man. I don't know what the fuck's out there, frankly.
let's just say we're gonna do Tenet.
Oh boy.
It'll be like our Matt Damon. And we ran out of time for Tenet.
Ran out of time for Tenet.
All right. Well, homework could be something of a question mark. You ready to get started?
I sure am. Let's rock.
Alexa, stop.